Okay, I need to begin at the right place, and the right place is to prepare you for the summer. Barbara and I will be doing some traveling, a little bit more than usual, because I'm now retired as well. That means that we can drive instead of fly and take our time getting there and take our time getting back. So from time to time, there will be substitute teachers. If you come in one Sunday morning, I'm speaking to all of you. If you come in on a Sunday morning and I'm not here and nobody else is here ready to take the leadership of the class, then what do you do? Let me help you this far. If Judy's here, Judy will come up, handle the prayer list. Rusty will take it down. Okay. If Barbara's here, she'll take a record of attendance and turn that into the church office someplace. If I'm not here and there's nobody else here to do the lesson, then Judy can help you with this. But if Judy and Rusty are gone too, then you need to know what to do. So here's the plan. You will have a Quaker meeting. You will begin with prayer list as usual, and somebody will take charge. Be bold. Be brave. Somebody do that. Write those things down. Just keep them someplace. If you can figure out how to use the address up there, you can send them to me at discoveryclass.net. They've erased my email address now. You can send them to babc.discovery@gmail.com, and that'll get it to Leonard, who will get it up there. But for the lesson time, you will have a Quaker meeting. What does that mean? Number one, it's a modified Quaker meeting. It does not mean all the women have to sit on one side and all the men have to sit on the other side. I don't know if Quakers still do that, but I know they used to. It's a modified Quaker meeting. There's no seating arrangements that are required. But what do you do? You sit quietly until God's Spirit moves one of you to speak a word from the Lord. And if you are moved to speak the word to the Lord, you briefly state what it is God has given you to speak. And then you sit down. And for a little while, everybody thinks about that. Meditates on that. And if God sends a word to somebody else, then that person says whatever they say. And you keep going until it's time to quit. Somebody closes prayer. And it's up to you to do this. I believe you are capable in every respect of handling this. But that's what you need to be prepared to do. I do not plan to leave you leaderless. But we have had days where people didn't realize that it was this day that they needed to be here. I walked in this morning. There's a projector, there's a screen set up, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, did I arrange for somebody to get in if they got the wrong week? Because I wasn't prepared for this morning. We have had people come and teach the first hour and forget that they're supposed to also teach the second hour. We've had people come in knowing they needed to teach the second hour, but forgetting they needed to get here early and teach the first hour. So the first hour has gotten these same directions. So far, okay? Modified Quaker meeting if we're not here. And if you just pass a piece of paper around and write your name on it, if you were here, turn the piece of paper over and record these things and then save it until we get back. Or make a copy and email it to me, and we'll get it into the list. So far, okay?
Bill, all right. Yes. It took your place several weeks ago.
Yes.
Outstanding. He was really good.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm glad to hear that.
I do remember there was a church somewhere where the pastor was gone on a particular Sunday, and they had a guest person in to preach. And at the end of this preaching, the minister of music stepped up to the podium and said, "Wow, we haven't had preaching like that around here in a long time." And a week after that, the minister of music was gone. So you want to be real careful about how you manage things like this. That's a true story. Okay, now, at this point, you are off the hook.
But also, my role.
I said, wants
to take, just send around a piece of paper, everybody sign a piece of paper for attendance.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And somebody take it up to room 204 if they can. if it's not me, who cares? It's people in room 204 who care.
Okay. Now, you're off the hook. I don't think you were here last week, so I think you guys are off the hook. But the rest of you who are here, what was your assignment? Read Proverbs 10, Proverbs 11, Proverbs 12, and identify two proverbs out of each chapter that meant something special to you at the time that you read it. That was your homework assignment. Okay, what's your assignment going to be for next week? To do the same thing, because we'll probably just get to a 10 today. Next week it'll be read 11, 12, and 13, and we'll probably get to 11. Okay? So, we're working on chapter 10, and my question is, this is going to be a little different, because you're teaching the lesson, essentially, did you identify a proverb in chapter 10 that spoke to you in a special way? And are you prepared to say so?
Since you reminded me on the walk, I did
this. Yeah. John's a neighbor of mine, and I saw him briefly and suggested he might not want to forget this.
Obviously, I told Patrick wrong. I mean, Jerry wrong.
Careful.
Two. You said two, so I think two. But I had more than two.
Well, pick one, and then we'll deal with that one, and then we'll deal with another one. What's your first one?
My first one is the wise.
Which verse is it?
10:8. The wise in heart accepts commands, but shadow comes from.
Read it one more time.
The wise in heart accepts commands, but a shattering fool comes to
mine says the wise are glad to be instructed. I certainly picked up on that one. But babbling fools fall flat on their faces, it says. The message is probably more memorable than that. Okay, why did that speak to you?
I guess for years I sort of felt like I wasn't a good listener.
So that comes out of your experience. There was a colleague of mine years ago. It was a colleague. There are very few of my colleagues of whom I can say this. He was a colleague I didn't particularly like. He had some characteristics about how he treated students that I didn't like at all. But he said one wise thing one day that has stuck with me ever since, and that is college students are the only consumers in the United States who are delighted when they get less than they pay for. They are delighted when they get less than they pay for. Their favorite course would be one in which they got an A and never had to go to course, never had to go to class and learn anything. When you have a student who is ready to teachable, I think, is a phrase that I sometimes use in letters of reference. A teachable person. And that's what I think he's talking about here. Okay. Anybody else want to comment on this one?
Well, I want to make a comment on that. You said things mean different things to you at different times.
We haven't said that this morning. I think it bears repeating. Would you like to say that this morning?
Well, I was going to say that comment you made about college students being the only ones being happy to get less than they pay for.
Yeah.
As a parent now, though, when I had kids in college and I felt like they were getting less than they paid for, I was not happy at all.
You bet. You bet. The kids, and not all kids fall under that, but enough of them do to be frightening. Okay. Anybody else want to comment on this one?
You still call it a gut? You used to call it a gut, a class where you didn't have
it. Yeah.
I just remember a guy from Benedict and Jared Ross, he was a few years ahead of me at UVA. He would go around with a notebook. Hey, you need a gut? You can have a list of them already. Guaranteed
it. It better be by professor, because sometimes the thing can turn into a not gut course if you change professors. Okay. Who else has another one? Before I ask Gary to bring up a second one.
Oh, you want Gary to bring
up? No. I was going to say, if everybody's silent, I'll come back to him. It looks like he's done his homework. I really like that. Excellent. Yes, ma'am.
Thanks,
Edward. I just didn't tell him to do two, but yeah. Obviously. mentally, it ruins their lives. You have to learn to forgive.
Read the first half in your translation.
Hatred stirs up dissension.
Dissension.
Okay. That says quarrels.
Conflict. Yeah. It's hard to stay mad at somebody when you know they genuinely care for you. And I think this is at least one twist on this particular one is there. I can remember a person who ended up becoming one of my closest friends. And when I first met him, he irritated me in just nearly everything he did. And I started to realize it was coming out of a very different perspective in his heart than I had originally thought. I thought he was just being irritable, and he wasn't. And once I got my head straight, all of a sudden I viewed him very, very differently. And he became one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am?
Message says, hatred starts fights, but love pulls a quilt over the bickering.
Isn't that funny?
Whoa.
Pulls a quilt over the bickering.
It covers it up.
Yeah.
But a quilt is warming. And if it's a quilt that grandma made,
I've got the message on the right side of what I'm looking at here, and I went one more verse. You'll find wisdom on the lips of a person of insight, but the short-sighted needs a slap in the face. There's an old Calvin and Hobbes cartoon that shows Calvin and Hobbes sitting behind a sidewalk store. And across the front it says, a swift kick in the rear, $1. Third panel, Calvin says to Hobbes, I just don't understand why we're not getting more business. Everybody I know needs what we're selling.
I think of a sad time in my family's history where this 12 hatred stirs all the quarrels, inheritance issues, and
they're still lingering.
A lot of hatred came out, and we never knew. It must have all been hidden for years and years, and all of a sudden, it's there, and they haven't been able to get over it and beyond it and through it.
We're, 25 just, years on?
Yeah.
20 years on?
Just dealing with property, land, you know, and who gets what, how much, and where's the love to cover that, all you can think is that the hatred was there all those years, and it just never came out. To the surface before.
Now it's dissolving the family.
Tore the family apart. And it's still.
Mm-hmm. You have to go visit one over here, and then you go on another day to visit this one over here. Can't visit them both inside. Who else wants in on this? Sally.
10:25. And the NIV says, when the storm is swept by, the wicked are gone, but the righteous stand firm forever. And NLT is, when the storms of life come, the wicked are whirled away, but the godly have a lasting foundation. And there was a time in Botswana, but we had a really difficult time, called it especially. As often can happen in those situations, he was accused of stealing $9,000, something like $9,000 from the church.
Which always owed $8,000, I stole.
But anyway, it was something that was very hurtful, not completely unexpected in the context, but very, very hurtful. And you know what? It proved itself. I mean, the accusation came from a guy that was, I guess he was just hurting. I don't know. Just hurting. And when it was all said and done, when it was all said and done, this was just, they were struck away. The guy, the family, he hurt his whole family. And they were, quote, swept away from the church or whatever. And that was the saddest situation. at the same time, the righteous stand firm, and this guy here is not a holier-than-thou guy. He's a humble fellow, my husband, and yet he stood firm in love. It was a hard time, but this just really hit me. When the storm has swept by, when the storm is over, the wicked are gone. When the storms of life come, the wicked are thrown away, but the God has a lasting foundation.
Exactly.
That may even relate to what you're talking about, Bob. I mean, just the same kind of thing.
Yeah. The message, the last part, good people firm on their rock foundation aren't even phased. Jesus Christ is our rock. He is our foundation.
I don't know about that, because he was certainly phased. Didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, is there any other scripture verse in the Bible or passage that pops into your mind when you listen to that verse? Because there certainly was for me. That's actually the verse that I marked out of chapter 10.
When all this conflict was going on, for me it was Romans 8:28.
All things work.
Because I feel like,
because I jumped into Matthew, I think it was, where it talks about building your house on sand or building your house on rock, and picking up the idea of the foundation that you were just talking about. Anybody else on this verse? Okay. Who else wants in? If you guys care to do your homework late and join in while we're working on this, yes, ma'am.
Verse 22. God's blessing makes life rich. Nothing we can do can improve on God. Bob and I have been through so many things, and we know other things are coming. That's just part of life, but we know that He will be there blessing us, walking with us through everything. It's just so reassuring.
Mm-hmm. Who else? Yes, ma'am. Cynthia.
Number 24. What the wicked dread will overcome them, what the righteous desire will be granted.
Mine says hope instead of desire, but it's that same thought.
Well, what I came out with was the word dread.
Yep.
This is the word fears. The wicked men's
dread is a more potent word, isn't it?
Yes, and it is so potent that the people that dread, that are dreading something,
is it fair to say that there are some people who live their lives in fear?
Yes.
Even when there's not always a whole lot of reason for that. And there's other people who live their lives in hope when, at the same time, there might not, at that moment, look like a lot of reason for that.
That's right.
Rhonda Sadler is just being remembered. Yeah.
Which verse is that?
Verse 24, is that what you said? Mm-hmm. Chapter 10, verse 24. And again, it adds something to it to look at this in more than one translation, because sometimes one translation, the word dread wouldn't have come up in some other translations, and that's a word that adds a potency to that, I think, that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Now, I used the King James Version.
Good.
At home, and I didn't bring it, so Ronald yep. looked his up in this version, but I noticed the difference is extreme.
And sometimes it's not, and sometimes it is. And that's why I try to make sure that when I'm preparing to work with you, I've looked at least two translations. And I'm counting on you to bring in what you see. I count on Sydney bringing in the message, because I know she carries that every time. When she doesn't, I sort of cheat over here, because I can put two things side by side in the electronic device I have. But sometimes a word phrasing, Barbara has a paraphrase Bible that sometimes has some very memorable phrases in it that's nice to have. Who else? Judy, you said you had.
Verse 1. Oh, Christopher visited us yesterday for Father's Day with his little son. And it says, a wise son makes his father glad, but a foolish son, is a grief to his mother. And I just, we have to think over the course of his life. And there were certainly moments in his.
Are we speaking about the little boy, or are we speaking about the son?
The Christopher. There were certainly times in his high school and college time where he was a grief to his mother.
And his mom.
But to watch him with his little son and what he is learning and doing and the wisdom that he has gained, it's just. It's joy.
We had a long discussion on that verse in the first hour, wondering whether the gender roles were accurate or fair or
pertinent.
Yeah, and I made the comment that this is written out of a culture that's different from ours.
Yeah.
And that has to be said. But God inspires Scripture so that it speaks to our generation, too. And there was some discussion about the mother usually having a closer relationship with the little children for a time, and fathers having often, traditionally anyway, a more distant relationship for a time, and that maybe they're talking about the results that come from that. You just testified to that. Rusty, and then Sally.
I'll add to what Judy said. I kind of wish Ruby was here. About a year after Chris got out of college, he cornered me in the kitchen one day and said, if you tell anybody this, I'll set it off at night. He said some words your parents always love to hear. You and Mom will write about a lot of, about most things. And I agree.
Wow.
And I agree and say, don't you mean almost everything? You just That is a
powerful moment to treasure, isn't it?
Oh, yes. You made it all worthwhile.
Not about that part.
It redeems some of it.
It does.
Sally, you were going to add something?
I just wondered if to the father, he may see the foolishness as wisdom, but the mother, I mean, I'm just wondering in this particular verse, a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son grieves his mother. Is it the same action that the mother sees in his foolishness in this context?
I don't think so. I think they're talking about two different behaviors, two different functioning for kids.
Is it wrong to interpret father and mother as parents? Did you just replace that with parents?
I think you could, but I think you would be losing something of the culture out of which this came. In the culture in which this came, I think the writer of this proverb would have meant father and mother, and I don't think we can walk too far away from that. I think from our vantage point, replacing it with parent is a good way to read it, but I don't think we ought to forget that it was written the other way originally. I don't think it was this verse, but there was another verse, but this is close enough. I think you have to include not just parents. I think you have to include kindergarten teachers. And I'm saying that because my wife and my daughter are both kindergarten teachers. I think you have to include people who have invested so much in the lives of children like you have. You have to look at not just that. I know there's a little boy that comes with his parents. His parents are in the first hour. And I've been working real hard to make sure that little boy knows who I am and knows I care about him. I've tried real hard with your granddaughter in that regard, and I think it's paid off. She now knows who I am, and she gives me a hug whenever we see each other. I wish I had been able to do that for lots and lots more. You guys right now are having the chance to do that for many more students up in the place where you were. I think if we were to change it to parents, it would carry a meaning for this. But I think it needs to be wider than that. What was the verse that they brought up? Yeah, verse 7 was where we spent some time in the first hour, and I'm not sure you're going to bring that up, and I want to make sure that we have. Look at verse 7 for a minute. We have happy memories of the godly, but the name of a wicked person rots away. We had a person in the first hour speak for a moment, and she talked about having grown up in a home where the parents had no concern for God and no concern that she have any knowledge of God. But if somebody would come by the house and pick her up and take her, they'd allow her to go. And there was a succession of people that took an interest in her. And ended up, the ones that seemed to crystallize all of this was in a GA group that she was in for middle school and high school. And she looked back with tears in her eyes talking about that. And what happened was we ended up walking around the room with everybody in the room being able to give a name, or sometimes two names, for people who had invested in them that way. There will be a substitute teacher, if everything works right, who had that kind of experience in college. He went to college penniless. And the person who ran the college cafeteria noticed him, gave him a job, and by having a job, she could put a plate of food in front of him three times a day. There was other people in the little community that gave him a room to stay in return for mowing the lawn. And eventually some other things like this. And I had a conversation with him about this. And he said that little town had some of the best people on the face of the earth in it. That little town is where I grew up. So on Facebook about 3 days ago, a friend of mine from those days put up a picture of her father on Facebook. He's gone now. He was dressed in the uniform of an Air Force captain, and he was the pilot of a B-24 during World War II. I didn't know that. All I knew was he was on the faculty at the college and taught biology, and he was a very knowledgeable guy and seemed to be somebody who took an interest in his students. He worked alongside of my dad. My dad taught chemistry. He taught biology. Well, I wrote something then, and I pondered afterwards about the words that I used. I wrote to her and I said, your dad was one of the good ones in that town. And that town seemed to be filled with good ones. If you have been in a place where people have invested in you, they're the good ones. And verse 7, I think, is, it didn't jump out at me until this conversation started in the first hour. And I realized that this morning is one of the most powerful verses to me. This is maybe the time to insert this. When you come back and look at Psalm 10 next time.
Psalm 10.
Psalm 10. That's what we did all through the first hour. Proverbs 10, Proverbs 10. When you come and look at Proverbs 10, a different verse will jump out at you next time. And a different one yet the next time you come back. Because your life circumstances, what's on your mind, what you've been thinking about, will be different. Okay. What other verses do you want to call to mind? We've got time for maybe one or two more. Chapter 10. Greg?
Yeah, verse 5. He who gathers in the summer is a wise son, and he who sweeps the harvest is a son who causes shame. I just remember that was.
You worked on the farm in the summer.
Yeah, when I was little, my grandparents had a farm, and the aunts and uncles, I guess they needed a break from kids, so they'd take us up, drop us off on a Sunday afternoon for 2 weeks during harvest time. And I was telling John, you know, we cousins hadn't seen each other. We'd stay up all night Sunday night, listen to the radio and talking. And my grandfather come in at 6 in the morning and say,
time to work.
Time to hit the fields, boys. And we'd say, well, we sleep in the summertime about 8 or 9. And he'd tell us, out in the fields, that we have, we ain't going nowhere until we've had breakfast. And he'd say, breakfast is over at 6. And he'd send us out the door, and my grandmother would be there and hand us a sausage biscuit. They play good cop, bad cop. But you know, when on the farm, when it's time to work, you just got to do it. They got to do it, and they got to do it then, and it doesn't matter. But I don't know, you know, I knew my grandfather was saved, and I never read the Bible. He didn't use these exact words, but something like that.
My nephew says, makes hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you've ever been around a farm, that's what they got to do.
My grandfather's brother lived in Kansas City. And there was a summer when my brother was spending the summer at a university in Arkansas. he made arrangements to take two of his buddies up to Kansas City to see Kansas City and to spend nights with this great uncle. And he told me the first morning that they were there, they'd gotten in late Friday night. So here was Saturday morning. Guy walks into the room at 5:30 and says, "Up and at 'em, boys. You said you wanted to see Kansas City. It's out there on your feet." And it wasn't quite harvest out the door and work. It was, you know, a chance to really to see Kansas City. But he said, "It's time. You're not going to sleep the day away." So
that's what we want to do. Sometimes the word's out. You know, at the end of the week, he'd say, "Here's a quarter. I think you ate more than you earned."
Rough as a cob comes to mind as a descriptor, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'd say he was smaller than I am, but you know, thought he was John Wayne. I'd say he was a tough guy.
Yeah.
And it was no foolishness on the farm.
I think one of the reasons our son-in-law has turned out to be the man he is because he spent every summer on the farm with his granddaddy and grandmother. And his cousins would come in and they would be there together. And they'd go 2 months or 2.5 months of the summer doing all the farm work alongside the granddaddy. And I think... Well, I think Mike did it, and I think it's a good part of the man he is. That, he doesn't like to be idle. He does not like to be idle.
I was raised on a farm, and I was taught to be honest and respect other people. That problem is something that would never ever be taken away from me. My dad, back then, you did have Sunday go to church clothes.
Yeah.
My dad would dress up and go to church. My mom stayed at home because we had people from Elton, Child Cannon coming from Richmond Brothers. It was eight of the last paint. But they were coming for these big meals, and she always prepared. And I honestly can say there was not a better Christian in this world than my mom. And she didn't get to go to church very often.
Yeah.
But she made sure that we went. And she's worth the belief.
My great grandfather, I remember him. Sunday morning, church. Sunday night, church. Wednesday night, church.
We have happy memories of the godly.
And I spent a lot of time on the farm, and they had a quite rigid schedule that they would follow. Even the women would be cooking and washing, and wash in the morning, put it on the line, in the afternoon they ironed. I don't know how they could stand and iron in the summertime down there with them, because they had to get the wood stove going so they could heat them up.
Any other verse comes to mind?
Talking about families, number 14 reminds me of my daddy. A wise man holds his tongue. A fool blurts out everything he knows, and that leads to sorrow and trouble. My daddy was a man of few words, but they were special words.
Do you remember you have to be old enough to do this. There was a commercial for a financial advising group, Smith Barney. And they would go on and on and on and on. And finally, the tagline on the commercial was, "When Smith Barney speaks, people listen." And that was Barbara's dad. He didn't say much, but when he said something, it had great impact. What else? We got time for one more.
I liked 19. When words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise.
Yeah. Did they do a responsive reading in the gathering? We did a responsive reading in the traditional service where a speaker speaks and then the congregation speaks. And then
we did. Right.
Well, in the one that we had, I think at least half of the verses came out of the Proverbs. And they were variations on that verse. Variations on 14 and variations on 19. If you just measure your words, say what needs to be said and stop, you're going to do a lot more good and have a lot more good effect. If you just yak on. in my role, I want to do one more thing. And I'm calling your attention to a structure that exists within this chapter. It may exist within other chapters as well. I don't know if it works in your translation. It may be translation specific. I'm pretty sure the Message might not make this work. But the rest of them, let's see. Look at verse 11. And I'm not looking at the whole of the verse. I'm looking at the structure of the first little bit. Mine says, the words of the godly. Does yours say something like that? Does yours have that? Something of the something. Does it have that structure? Okay. Come down to verse 16. Do you see that same structure? Mine says the earnings of the godly, and then it begins to talk about those. Come down to verse 20. And verse 21, the words of the godly, the words of the godly. Much more appropriate for what was in the worship service today. Verse 22, the blessing of the Lord. Verse 24, the fears of the wicked. Verse 24, the hopes of the godly. Verse 27, the fear of the Lord. Verse 28, the hopes of the godly. Verse 29, the way of the Lord. Verse 31, the mouth of the godly. He's beginning to give characteristics and attributes to the godly or the wicked, and begins to build the Proverbs around that thought, saying it a different way. My words have consequences. My thoughts have consequences. The path I take through life has consequences. And that structure, something of the something. Fear of the Lord, hopes of the godly, words of the godly, the earnings of the godly in that early example. And I'm inviting you, simply take a look at that. Verse 31, verse 32, the mouth of the godly person, the lips of the godly, and then the mouth of the wicked. And there's contrasts that are set up between those. That contrast is made possible because of that structure. And just watch for that. I don't know all the significance to pull out of that, but I know there's some significance there. You might watch for that. Characteristics that begin to define. Are you a person that would be described as godly? Or are you a person who would be described as either foolish or wicked? There seems to be a difference between those two. Anything else you want to say before we quit? I want to especially welcome you home. Welcome home. You've been missed and you've been remembered. I'm glad to see you guys back. You've been out a little ways.
You're welcome.
Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for these words that are so many thousands of years old and yet still speak to us today. And we understand that what they say today may be different from what they say next month or next year, as our circumstances adjust. That's the power of your word. It can speak into the circumstances that we're experiencing at a given time. And so we thank you for your provision. And we thank you that we have the ability to read and the ability to gather and discuss this. I pray that you would watch over and guide each one of us in the days that are coming, that we would bring honor and glory to you in all that we think, say, and do. For we pray all this in your Son's precious name. Amen. Your assignment is to read.